Welcome to Cognitive Rampage, kind of. This is a special segment that I have never done with anybody that I couldn't wait to do with the man that you all know very much, Naudi Aguilar, founder of Functional Patterns. What we're going to be doing, I'm calling it the Myths of Fitness, right? And so what we're going to do weekly, every Wednesday at noon or close to it, I know we're about 15 minutes late, but that's just what we're going to do. So every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time, we're going to take either a workout or a movement. And Naudi basically is just going to teach me, and hopefully it'll teach you. Well, I know it will. And so it's going to probably require putting some myths to bed and all this other stuff. So I hope you tune in weekly each time that we do this. Now, we are going to start off with posture. Okay. Now, you've heard it all from it's the base of everything, the start of everything, that if you affect your posture, we've heard many, many different things about posture itself. So for me, Naudi, thanks for doing this with me every week, man. I appreciate for the next, who knows how long we're going to do this, you coming on and sharing this with me, man.
Hey, it's my pleasure, man. It's like I said, it's good to have dialogue with sane people on this planet and being able to discuss relevant topics like posture and exercise in general, and at least doing it in a relative spectrum. I want to preface that the opinions that we're going to put forth on these podcasts are not confirmed by the way that you deem science. They're not acceptable by science. My perception of the scientific establishment is that it's corrupted. I think that they are very reductionistic in their scientific testing and that it's not conclusive to the slightest degree. And I think they need to start stepping their game up and start testing systems like Functional Patterns. I am all open towards it. I'm all open to it. If you guys want a piece, I will give you some. I'd be more than happy to show you guys what Functional Patterns is about and put it through the scientific scrutiny. People have been running from me the last few years, and nobody wants to test it. So when you guys get my opinions, this is based upon our research at Functional Patterns. We have people all over the world employing this system. We have people all over the world who have trained people who have done the squats, the gymnastics, the yoga. They've done everything all across the board, and they have the same complaints about their pains that they have right here in Seattle, Washington, where I have my facility, and we deal with those similar types of people. So to preface this entire series of videos that we're going to do, nothing that I'm going to say is confirmed by science, so I just to save you guys time, I'll tell you that. All I'm doing here is making predictions. For the future, this is what science will uncover in the future when you guys finally decide to start testing these variables. And it's going to these are my predictions. I am going to assume that they are going to be seen as the standard for the coming generations of fitness professionals.
Well, you bring some good points too, especially about science. I mean, and even in the mental health side, if you dive into what science says, you can generally find that money can make statistics and research say just about whatever you want it to. And these are major schools too, Harvard, Yale, Johns. Mm-hmm. These major schools are the ones that get paid the big bucks and the big professors that have tenure that can't go anywhere that say, you know, opiates are non-addictive, like they said back in the 70s. So, yeah, man. So all of that.
Well, even to elaborate on that a little bit before I get into this, I've talked to multiple students who are physical therapists in my courses, physical therapists, physiotherapists, osteopaths, and they have literally told me that they have been part of studies and then they were taken off of the study. They were taken away from it because it was the conclusions were going to get washed out. What they were hoping for was going to get kind of put to the side with the study. So they just started eliminating people from it. So that way they could conclude that what they were saying was right all along. It's super corrupt, absolutely corrupt. And I've had people who were involved in the universities. They told me the schools of which they were doing it at. And I'm not going to list these schools. I'm not going to talk anything along those lines. But yes, this is what they actually do. So it is pretty messed up.
Yeah, man. So walk us, forgive the pun here, walk us into posture. I mean, where do we start here?
I want to also preface this video by saying that posture is probably the most overrated facet in training, and not necessarily because it's not important. It's because everybody has jumped on it recently. Even last night, I had a guy who was on Instagram. I won't mention his name, but he decided to put a before and after in the way that we apply, and he didn't decide to cite the source. And as many of you probably know, FP is growing pretty rapidly. The Facebook page, the YouTube, the Instagram, they're all blowing up pretty well right now. And so we have a lot of people trying to bite on what we are doing. And everybody is jumping on the posture bandwagon. The problem is I was working on the posture bandwagon about 4 years ago. I was obsessed with it. Okay, how do I decode every little deficiency that I possibly can, from a scapular wing to a kyphosis to a forward head to an anterior pelvic shift, hyperlordosis, then eventually moving on into scoliosis. After taking this entire route of attacking posture, I've kind of come to realize that it's like you don't need to work on it that long. There are aspects of it you do need to work on, but movement is going to be more important following the posture. All posture really is going to represent is an anchor of tension. A man named Paul Check has discussed a lot of the theories in regards to posture, and he gives a really good example where he talks about that if you are on a boat and there's no anchor on it, and you shoot a cannon off that little boat, the boat's going to move, not the cannonball. So the key point is when you start talking about intrinsic stability through your posture, like your transverse abdominis and your diaphragm, the way that we talk about it and the way that we apply it, really all it really is, it's a fulcrum of stability that you wouldn't have typically. Most people tend to anchor their movement off their lower back, off of their upper glutes, off of their quadriceps. This is generally where people tend to institute their center of gravity when they where they tend to institute their anchor of stability before actually going into a movement. And at FP, what we do, we employ posture as just the most basic anchor that you can use before you go into training. Another thing I want to go into is that everybody has theorized about posture, and I'm yet to see any examples of it. So I think it's unfortunate that that more people aren't actually testing this very important theory. And I think because people haven't been testing, they're still stuck on the posture. And I think what's really important is that at some point people.
Uh-oh. One second, Naughty. You disappear for a second. You'll come back, I'm sure. You there?
Yep, I'm here.
There you go. Keep going, man.
Yeah, so pretty much what I the posture is a very important variable, and it needs to be commanded. But I think it needs to be elaborated on a little bit. I'm hopefully going to be able to give you guys more clarity of it. But really, Adam, all posture represents is the first anchor of stability. So, like, let's say if I get a person who sways their body from side to side when they're walking, that's indicative that they're anchoring their stability from a muscle called their quadratus lumborum, and they're anchoring their stability from their plantar fascia and partially the inner portions of their calves. That's where they're actually anchoring their stability and their IT bands.
A quick question, man. My wife is an ARMP and tons of ERs and has seen a massive, massive, massive increase in plantar fasciitis.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's directly correlated. Let me put it this way. So your pelvis, let's say if you start walking, right? Your pelvis, for the most part, should have a little bit of rise and a little bit of fall as you walk forward. So if I'm walking towards you, your pelvis should do this. As your legs step forward like this, they should have a rise and fall like this, slightly. There should be a rotation in the upper body that comes along with that. Now, if you end up getting too much of a rise or a rise and then you get a shift, that prevents you from doing this with your legs, right? So if you're not able to do this function with your legs because your hips are going like this all over the place, as the majority of society, especially people who do that touch butt stuff, the natural movements, their hips do all this kind of stuff. People who do yoga, they do all this kind of stuff with their hips.
I can obese also would make you have to kind of move a certain way to move all that forward.
Potentially, but I think being obese is better than being hypermobile because obesity creates this consistency. The problem when you start doing things like yoga and Pilates and things along those lines is that they almost – well, not so much Pilates, because Pilates does focus on core activation. Pilates, if anything, makes you super rigid in a certain way that actually makes it worse in another spectrum. That's actually more comparable to a person that's obese. But when you start getting somebody who's obese, it's more of a consistency. The other people have a non-consistency, and it becomes almost unpredictable what the body's going to do because it's so flimsy. The body, when you do yoga or something like that, doesn't establish anchors. There are no established anchors, and so it just kind of flimsily just flops wherever. And that's why you always have to deal with these people wanting to lay down and stretch and do all these things because they can't walk, because their body doesn't have this intrinsic control. There are three pillars of posture, as I describe it in my book, The Power of Posture. So in that book, we discuss where that first anchor of stability is. But what I want you to consider is that if your hips are moving like this, your legs are not given the opportunity to do this. So guess what ends up happening? You get this torque pattern that ends up happening on the tibia, on your foot, on your femurs, and that torque pattern eventually stops at your plantar fascia, and that's where you end up getting people with plantar fasciitis. So plantar fasciitis is a very simple thing to address. All it pretty much means is the person is anchored off of their foot instead of being anchored off of their core. Now, how do you eliminate the plantar fasciitis and the tensions in how do you eliminate that distortion and reassociate it to your core? That is no easy task, and that's the reason that it took me many, many years to find out how to institute a more effective standing posture. So that whole issue with the plantar fasciitis is directly linked to the weakness in the core, to the weakness in the transverse abdominis, because if we got more activation going this way, that means our tensions would be oriented from our glute max, from our hamstrings, from our soleus, and from our gastrocnemius. These are all muscles on the backside of our thighs. And if we redistribute the tension all the way through the backside of the posterior portions of the thighs, that means the plantar fascia will no longer have to compensate for the inactivity of the muscles happening up above. And never mind the tissues that actually run contralaterally into the upper body. It's a big, even dispersal. So it's very uncommon for people to really deal with a lot of those types of problems at functional patterns, because we just redistribute the fascia because we really focus on that anchor of stability. But that's pretty much what the main reason why you would have a person with a plantar fasciitis. Regarding back to the whole notions of posture as a general concept, eventually, breaking posture is going to be a part of the cycle of movement. All posture is also going to represent after you've broken a movement. Let's say if I break my posture and I slightly tilt my rib cage laterally, or if I'm going to slip a punch and slightly protract the shoulder, then I'm going to come back and throw a cross. Posture just represents the midpoint of the spectrum when it comes to functional movement. So I'm going to back this up a little bit. So we have one end of the spectrum over here, and then we have an opposite end of the spectrum. So let's say this spectrum is a muscle contraction. This spectrum over here is a muscle elongation, right? So this is full functional range of motion, full functional elasticity, right? And there is a range. Most people are actually training out here with their spectrums in terms of doing their hypermobility. And then at that point, they never achieve this because they're stuck at the extremes over here and over here. Functional range of motions are a little bit smaller. So if I think about throwing a punch, it's a small range of motion that propels the fist forward. It's not big, big movements that propels a sharp punch. That's why if you look at somebody like Floyd Mayweather, he doesn't move a lot. His fist moves a lot, but his torso, his body barely moves at all. His body is operating within a smaller spectrum. So powerful. You don't want the Yeah, go ahead.
More powerful that way, right?
Yes. Well, it's less wasteful. When you start thinking about operating from a bigger spectrum, if I'm going to throw a punch and I go all the way here and all the way over here, it takes forever for you to potentially to create that potentiation. Also, there's a lot of muscles that miss activation going from here to here, which means that you're not going to really crucial muscles like your serratus anterior involved on your punches, your pec major involved on your punches, your obliques, your rhomboids, serratus posterior. Like, you will not get these muscles instituted if you're taking a long, long approach to moving the tissues this way. Whereas if you take a more functional spectrum, which is what I'm talking about, where it's just probably more around right here, like, which is a little bit smaller, this is actually the world of functional movement. This is the one that people are missing. And so what the posture has enabled me to do is it's enabled me to bridge the gap between the contraction and the elongation, right? And what the posture did is it kind of centered me. So now I say, you know what, today I want to focus on my mobility to some degree. Okay, all I have to do is just operate from the spectrum of muscle activity, and then, okay, now I'm there, now I'm going to come right back. Okay, now let's say if I have a really tight muscle over here, what I do is I say, okay, I'm going to push this muscle right here. This is what we're doing right now. Through an exercise, we're going to push that muscle all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of its functional capacity, and where's it going to land? It's like if you're shooting a basketball at wind. You're shooting it a little bit harder, so then hopefully it lands right in the middle. And so when I think of posture, all it is just establishing a nucleus. You're establishing a center of gravity, a center in which the body can go back to. Now, many people talk about posture not being important because, you know, you need to get out of position sometimes. I think people's perceptions of what out of position are very, very skewed. When I talk about getting out of position, I talk about getting out of position relative to the spectrum going on here. Because if I look at Barry Sanders or Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders or Russell Wilson or any three-dimensional movers that I could think of, any fighters, they don't operate within the spectrum of here when it comes to getting out of position. They operate from a spectrum of being here when they get out of position. So they're theoretically never out of.
Lost you, man.
Huh?
There you are. You're back.
Yeah.
You said last we picked up was theoretically there. They are.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no such thing as a theoretical out of position. The theoretical out of position for most people is, okay, you're dead. You're being chased down by a lion and you just fell down and you're screwed, right? My theoretical is, okay, you got out of position. Okay, now you your tissues have become stretched. You fell down. And now, okay, you're going to do a somersault and whoop, you go back to a contraction. Then you're right back to your center. Okay, now keep running, keep running, keep running. That's my perception of being out of position. Anything that's out of position for me, the way I relate it is you're dead in nature. You are dead, you have given up, and you've died. So there is no out of position. So relating that back to the whole notions of posture, because I have to – there's a lot of overdoing this the last few years, I've taken a whole lot of heat for how I explain things. People are like, well, what about training out of position? And I think right now I'm elaborating on what my perceptions are when it comes to being out of position. So by hopefully doing the spectrum thing, it gives people a little more more clarity on the topic. Yeah, do you have any
I do, man. For me, I see. I love how you said less wasteful, because wasting energy is important. And say fighting, traveling, kayaking. Like when I was kayaking 3 days, I mean, even when I'm rowing, the last thing you want to do is to do major out of stretch paddles. You never want to do that. Like a row, you stay in the very same function steadily. That way, you last longer. The more you're dipping the paddle down, picking it up, the more you don't last as long. So, I mean, this theory makes so much sense, man. And
Well, this is another thing, Adam, is that everybody has been theorizing this shit. This isn't new information. Plenty of people know this in terms of the theory, but the application is where people are off. They have no clue what the application is supposed to reveal. And that's my foible with the industry, is that everybody's either operating with this spectrum where it's here to here, and while they're doing their deadlifts, or they're operating in this spectrum, doing touch butt, that Ido Portal method, doing the stretching and all that stuff, where they're going back and forth. But nobody's ever established, okay, what is actually a functional range of motion? A person that's going to determine a functional range of motion does it relative to their relative to a human's characteristics of movement. So humans run and they throw as a priority. So if you don't show yourself throwing, or if you don't show yourself running, or people that you've had running or walking, you can't really know whether people are balancing the tissues out. When you play sports, the most common the most common type of movement you do is running. If your running is completely flimsy, then you can't assume that you're really actually that you're making somebody more efficient. Like you heard Conor McGregor after he lost to Nate Diaz saying, "I'm not efficient in my movement." Of course, you're not efficient with your movement. You're always bending your spine. You're walking on a post, crossing your legs over when you're walking on railing. You're crossing one leg over the other. That's one of the worst things that you can do in a fight. Any decent boxing coach, not even high-level boxing coach, is going to tell you you shouldn't do that. Any decent Muay Thai coach is going to tell you you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't be doing ring dips before you go into a fight. You shouldn't be doing most of these things. You shouldn't be operating from this spectrum if you expect to be efficient. You need to operate from this spectrum if you expect to be efficient. If you throw a punch, and if you notice with Conor McGregor, if you notice that when he throws a 1-2, he's good, right? You go 1-2, and you'll be good. But as soon as he goes 1-2-3, that's what ends up happening on his third punch. Now he's off balance. That's because he's not training his muscles in a relative context in which he's holding a functional movement spectrum, right? Because he's never established a neutral posture. You'll never see the guy really activate his lower abdominals to their full capacity because he's still yet to address his anterior pelvic shift, because that's a very common thing that people have, and it's very difficult to overcome unless you know what you're doing. But he has an anterior shift and anterior tilt hyperlordosis, and that's what makes his movement do this. Now, he might win against Nate Diaz. He may win against this fight, and he may be able to pull something off against him. I still somewhat doubt it, but there's going to come problems where that hypermobility, that spectrum, you might be okay with movement, right? You might be able to compensate. But the minute somebody grabs you, right, that has more of this kind of strength, what's going to happen?
Done.
Oh man, I lost my. Oh, there we go. That has more of this kind of strength in this this spectrum. They're going to dominate. At the end of the day, what you got to think of is it's all vibrations, right? This is a loose vibration. This is a balanced vibration that can go back and forth, and then this one is very unadaptable. There's no length that comes with it. These are Olympic lifters, right? These are power lifters, right?
Yeah. I'm loving everything you're here, man. I'm so getting the functional patterns. You're finding those actual functional patterns within that range of motion that keeps you balanced. And to come back to the I get the posture part, or finding a better anchor, if you will, in a center two.
Mm-hmm.
There's a to come back to the spine posture, etc. Now, there's a lot of talk about the spine being curved, or should it be straight? What are your takeaways on this notion? What do you think? What are your opinions? Or
For one, this is something that I caught heat from, especially from people who do any kind of active release therapy, any kind of KMI, anatomy trains type of things. I got wrecked when I would show my before and afters of people's posture, showing that they actually have a command of their own posture, activating their TVA and their diaphragm, everything across that spectrum of finding neutral, right? I would get obliterated on this one topic over and over again, that the spine needs to have this curvature. It needs to be a natural curve on the spine. The problem with that notion is we are being irresponsible with a very subjective word called that we use called natural. What does natural even mean? And especially when you think about natural in relation to human beings, what does natural even mean? There is no benchmark. Now, if I say natural to a dog, that makes sense. There is no problem with the term natural in relation to a dog, because a dog will look at you walk, and a dog will not mimic your behavior in terms of walking, because its brain is not programmed to do that. But if you look at natural relative to a human, if you put a human inside of a dog kennel, the human will try and replicate the dog's behavior and walk on all fours. The implications of this are immense, in the sense that if I take the means or the average of a bunch of people who have a particular culture of, let's say, they walk a certain way, they talk a certain way, that all of a sudden affects your posture, right? If you're around people who are very insecure of themselves, they're going to carry a different posture, a different set of kinetics than somebody who's more confident. So you got to think, okay, if we're going to determine posture already by a cultural disposition, in terms of their cognition, they are not going to operate the same as a person who's confident. So that's going to immediately affect the position of a baby's spine as they grow into their adulthood. Then you take aspects like sitting, if you sit over extended periods of time, that then slowly begins to change your neuromuscular system. And then when you don't address the imbalances created by sitting, and then don't address your emotional traumas, and you start exercising, that's when you really begin to see these dysfunctions in the body. And this is where this natural curve in the spine becomes exacerbated. So if we look at the spine from a lateral vantage point, from a lateral view, we're not seeing something that's adaptive. People talk about that the spine's supposed to be like springy, and I think it's supposed to have a somewhat of a spring mechanism to it, but it makes no sense that if I slam my foot on the ground that I'm going to take that shock and then send it up my spine. It doesn't make sense that way. The spine.
Hold up. Wait till you come back, brother.
But most people don't see this. Even most physical therapists, they don't see this. They don't understand the implications of that. When a cheetah runs, it's running on all fours. It's running this way, and it's running on all fours. And its tail, and it all the way from its tail to its spine, it's doing this. Right? That's what it's doing when it's moving that way. Right? But when you're moving vertically, the last thing you want is your spine doing this kind of stuff. If that happens while you're walking, you are going to create a horrible, horrible compensation pattern in your lumbar spine. Not necessarily going to mean that you're going to have lower back problems, but if you bend your spine in a certain way and you are tested in life and you have your spine that's doing all this, you're going to tear something somewhere. There's no ways around it. So this whole notion of having this curvature of the spine or these natural curves, I don't think it carries as much relevance, simply because they're not they're not going deep enough to understand the root cause of what created this average of a spine that they're discussing. Because when they talk about a natural curve, they're just taking the average, the mean of an entire population of very distorted bodies, and then calling that natural, We can't really call anything natural in relation to human beings. All we can, all I see it as, is we look at a mathematical equation. How do the joints stack? How does a really good mover like Barry Sanders move? How do they look when they move? And that kind of tells you the position of the spine at which it needs to be. If you look at Barry Sanders run from the side, his hips are right underneath the shoulders, and that would indicate to me that when he's in movement, his spine is more straight than it is curved. So my perception of the spine is that when you accomplish neutral, you should be more straight. It should be more straight. Is that to say that it should always be straight? Absolutely not. It can't be straight. If I throw a ball, the spine cannot stay straight. The spine has to twist. The spine has to slightly bend at a certain point. The degree of which that spine bends and twists or it tilts, these are all relative to the circumstance. But when we're talking about a neutral position, from the external view, we still have to get the x-rays, but from the external view, the spine should probably look a little more straight. And again, this is relative to the testing that we are employing. Some people say, well, you know what? You might institute a flat back posture. We are not doing that. When we think about addressing a posture in the way that we do at functional patterns, we're addressing at least a good 20, 30 variables at the same time that everybody else, while everybody else has just been saying, okay, tilt your pelvis posteriorly and ignore what's happening at the lumbar erectors, ignore what's happening at the T-spine, ignore what's happening at the C-spine, ignore what's happening with your diaphragm, with your transverse abdominis, with your adductors at the upper fibers, with your adductors at the lower fibers, with your glute max fibers at the inferior fibers, with the peroneal fibers at proximal to the knee joint. Nobody is thinking about these things and instituting all these variables at the exact same time. And that's one thing that makes functional patterns absolutely unique to any other system, is that we are taking in all these variables and we're training the brain and body to connect these things all at the same time. And part of that variable at the very beginning is to give the spine a little more straight looking appearance. Are there still curves of the spine? Are there going to be curves of the spine? Absolutely. You don't want a rigid spine. You want a pliable spine, but you want strong muscle associations around that spine. So when you decide to get yourself out of position, your body goes, whoop, we're right back to center. Okay, I bend, whoop, and now I'm back to center. So the key point is, when you're training posture, you need to establish a center and then work your way out of position to do that. If you look at people that are doing the natural movements and whatnot, they're trying to explore these territories. They're just not seeing that the route they're going doesn't work, because they're still, the way that they balance their body and they do most of their exercises, they haven't accounted for gravitational force pushing their body downward this way. When the body runs and it moves, it's suspended in air on these types of motions. When you move laterally, you're suspended on horizontal force vectors and parabolic motions, which run this way. So you can't really correct the dysfunctions on a body. You can't really align the spine if you're still operating with this vertical force compression type of training. And I'll go deeper into that as we go along into future podcasts. I'll start talking about longitudinal dysfunctions that happen in the body and break that down in the future. But I'm assuming we're probably getting close to the end here, right, Adam?
Yeah, you got about 2 minutes here to close it out. But I'd ask you to probably try to give – that's so much information, man. I love it. Sometimes when I do that with mental health, I call it feeding them with a fire hose, that it's hard to walk away with, like, holy shit, right? It's so much. What's the one thing, the novice, the beginner, the person walking into it, maybe the one myth to consider when considering their posture, and the one thing to start doing? I know it includes a lot of mechanistic movements with you, but just one thing that the person sitting at home can go, all right, I can at least start here, and this is bullshit.
I would say my ebook is about $20, and I know people in the fitness industry who would take that information and sell it for easily $200 in a system, $300, just for what's in that book, and it covers the aspects of posture. Just spend $20 and buy the ebook. It's worth the investment. I'll just tell you that point blank. And if not, you can go onto the YouTube channel and find things on there. But there's just information in that book that it has to be explained specifically in order for you to understand it. So that would probably be the smartest decision you make. I mean, I know plenty of people that'll go out to the club and go spend $20 on a drink, but they won't spend $20 on their health. So the best thing I could recommend, if I'm going to be completely honest, because this is what's happened with thousands of other people who've bought my books and bought my materials, that when they buy the materials, they're like, oh yeah, all the nonsensical bullshit gets thrown out the window. And what you put together, considering the information, is very, very cheap. So I would recommend that you just go to my website, buy the book, The Power of Posture. Thousands of other people have done the same thing, and they feel substantially better. They feel their movement changes forever. And yes, I've gotten very good reviews from people. People have told me I don't post them on my website because I don't want to be one of those people. I don't want to be selling testimonials and whatnot. I'd rather be doing things like case studies. If I could recommend something for people, it's that, because you're not stepping into something that's basic. You're stepping into something that's very complicated. If it took 2 to 3 million years to evolve human structure, you're not going to reverse engineer the dysfunctions created by society that just evolved in the last 100 years. You don't just reverse engineer the body in a very simple fashion. So if I tell somebody, oh, this is what you need to do, it's like, no, we can't take an idiotic approach to something so complicated. This is a complex problem. If somebody tells you, oh, yeah, you know, movement is not rocket surgery, if somebody has said that before, they're simply not looking at the small. They're not looking at the spectrums. When you start looking at the spectrums, you're like, oh, my God, how is the body even being held up in place? From what point is this muscle pulling from to keep the body up in space? And how many lines of tension are having to activate right now to keep the body up in space in this context, 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 in this context? So we have an entire spectrum of which muscles activate, and we have reciprocations changing. There is a whole great deal of stuff that comes along with this. There is no simple solution. Now, if you want to go to some kind of a person that does myofascial therapies, then that's fine. You can go do there, and they'll release muscles, and they'll do things like that, but they're not going to resolve the issues that you have. If you have a lower back problem, and it's a chronic, ongoing thing that you're having to constantly deal with, the reason that lower back problem is there, the fact that you have not commanded your basic intrinsic structures, you have not commanded your transverse abdominis, your diaphragm, you've not commanded the way that you're.
Hold up, brother.
In that control, there's no way if you don't have at least somewhat of a grasp of how these systems work, you're going to be playing that. You're going to pretty much be a cog in the pharmaceutical industry's wheel, in which you're going to have to be taking pain prescriptions. You're going to have to either get surgery. You're going to have somebody constantly working on you. And it works great for the economic system in which we're living in, but it does not work good for your lower back, for your knees, and for your joints. If you want to resolve the issues with your body, you have to educate yourself. You can't continue to take this dumbed down notion that you're supposed to be stupid about your body. You need to educate yourself on what's going on with your body. And the tools that I offer on my website are just that. They add clarity. They cut out all the bullshit, all the ambiguity. And it's a very, very good way for you to overcome your problems and not become dependent on a very, very corrupt system that we have in this world. And what I have in these materials, they filter out all the bullshit. Like I said, I myself dealt with all the pains that I had, and I felt helpless because I didn't have money and I didn't have health insurance, so I had to figure all this shit out on my own. And here I am today. It's 10 years later since I felt my pain. I feel no pain with my body. I rarely ever feel pain. The only time I feel pain in my body is because I push it so hard at times in terms of my hikes or whatever. I'll go do a barefoot hike and my foot ends up getting a problem or something like that. But those are just tissue traumas that are inevitable. But in relation to joint pain, lower back problems, anything that's chronic, I've never dealt with a single chronic issue since I've had my original chronic issue. And so if you guys are looking for the best advice I could give you, go to the website, buy the book, or even just go to my YouTube channel. I got a ton of free information on there that cuts the bullshit out, and it helps you take charge of yourself without needing some external source to constantly be there to help you.
Man, I love the answer, because, you know, if I would have asked any other fitness type health person, the one takeaway, trust me, they wouldn't have sold their book, because they would have wanted to be cool. And at the end, they would have then pushed it. But the honesty of which you give it, because it is so complicated, and we live in a magic pill society.
Absolutely.
Tell me one thing, and then what's the core person trainer tell you? What's the kettlebell trainer tell you? Well, if you can do this one swing, get this one, start this, start small. I mean, fuck, man. We got, like you said, we have so much to undo, not only in your field, man, but in the mental health field, too. I feel like we're both fighting the two giants of, I mean, shit, We already know what the word natural doesn't mean in food and in nutrition. I mean, the complexities
no
of
shit.
The complexities of the brain itself, the complexities of the body itself, the complexities of psychology, of human experience. And yet we go, well, if you just stop soda for 1 week, and if you'll just stand a little taller for about 2 weeks and you know, put the chest out, right? We want to come up with these fucking fix it quick bullshit, man. And you know, I love it, dude. You set it off.
I think the biggest solution is let us not all be so delusional to think that we have this reality figured out. Let's take that approach first instead of just saying, well, do this one thing. It's like, let's take the approach of we don't have this reality figured out. Let's figure it out. Everybody's – and that's one thing even with the mental people or the people that are like, oh, it's yoga. It's all energy. They approach the ether of the world without thinking, okay, things are mechanical. We are still – we always revert back to the mechanical world. What are the mechanistic – problems, the mechanistic properties involved in this reality. How do I decode them and how do I resolve my problem? If you think that way, it doesn't take that long to resolve your problems. It just is very uncomfortable for most people in our culture because they're used to being fed this. Oh, if you just do this one thing, it's going to help you and set you off on this path. The one thing that I could recommend is don't slack off on understanding the reality. Don't be foolish to think that this internet that we have is not a useful tool in you resolving your dysfunctions. This is a very powerful tool. If you want to find out what you need to really do to resolve your problems, you need to use the internet to your advantage. And I think a lot of people are still stuck on social media, putting ass shots on Instagram or guys flexing in front of the mirror. I think they're using it for the wrong reasons. I think if people started saying, you know what, I'm going to use the internet and actually get tangible use out of it, and I'm going to take information from that that's going to benefit my health, I think that is the one thing I could recommend for people, that you start using the internet to your advantage. You know, people in Alexandria 2,000 years ago had a bunch of information, and it was only available to the rich people. We are in a very, very fortunate time today where we get all this access to information free of charge on the internet. We get all this great exposure for free. I think if we started using that perception on things in relation to the internet, instead of trying to just get involved in this validation whoritis, I think that would probably be the best thing you could do for your joints and for your posture. I know it doesn't seem like it. I think I brought it together, but I'm sure a lot of people on the surface wouldn't have gathered that. So I guess, you know what, that's my one thing, Adam. Use the internet. Use your brain. Think and start objectifying this reality around you and really start trying to decode what's here via the usage of the internet.
Yeah, man. I'll drop my one thing. And my one thing I take away for everybody on the mental side is don't stop questioning yourself first, society and social constructs. If you find yourself making a statement with the period, question the realities and question the truth and turn that period to a question mark and then put that question mark on yourself, others, the world, and ask yourself why. Man. Ask yourself why. Just fucking ask why you believe what you believe and go down that rabbit hole, man.
I love it.
Brother, I love you, man.
Yeah, I don't use the word love because it's a subjective variant, and we'll probably be able to get into that discussion later. But I am very extensional to you, Adam. That's the way I feel. I mean, it's still the same thing, but yeah, just in another variant.
Well, I still got some Native American in me, man. So I just tell you, I love you, love you in blood, brother, man. And I'll see you next Wednesday at noon. We're gonna tackle the perfect squat, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that'll be a fun one. I'm sure that'll be. That'll be one that people will be very angry about, and I look forward to seeing what excuses people hold on to obsessing over such a obsolete exercise.
You know, your obsessions we call concrete beliefs, and I talk about it in my book. If you have concrete beliefs and you're not willing to question them, they could be the anchors holding you down.
So. Absolutely. That whole notion of a concrete belief is a very, very accurate depiction. Yeah, non-changing beliefs No good around. They're no good relative to the natural world. But anyway, I probably rambled on for too long, man. So
that's what we both do, man. You kidding me? It's the cognitive rampage, man. We were 12 minutes late and we're 20 minutes over.
Okay, that's the way we roll around here, man. Fortunately, we're not on too many time constraints. But yeah, man, we'll be in contact, and I will see you in a week, brother.
See you in a week, man. See you, bud.
Take care, bro.
Bye.